Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of the extraordinary presidential powers to assassinate that are represented by the drone program and are at issue with the confirmation of John Brennan to head up the CIA. Bruce Fein, a constitutional lawyer who was Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Reagan administration and helped write the articles of impeachment for both President Nixon and President Clinton, joins us to discuss the kill list and the unchecked powers of the president. Then we'll look into the efforts to block Chuck Hagel's nomination as Secretary of Defense and the incendiary but baseless accusations made by freshman Senator Ted Cruz that Hagel received money from North Korea and that the Iranian government is celebrating his nomination. Matt Angle, who directs the Lone Star Project and was the executive director of the House Democratic Caucus, joins us to discuss the reincarnation of Senator Joseph McCarthy in Texas's junior Senator Ted Cruz and whether the nastiness of this Tea Party bomb thrower represents the future of Texas politics. Then finally, we'll examine the prosecutorial loophole that the renewal of the Violence Against Women Act seeks to close, which has 22 Republican senators and a majority of House Republicans siding with the abusers of women as they defend the status quo that allows non-Native Americans to rape and even murder Native American women on tribal land and get off scot-free. Sarah Deer, an expert on violence against Native women, where 80% of the rapes reported by Native women on tribal lands are perpetrated by outsiders, joins us. She's the author of Garden of Truth, The Prostitution and Sex Trafficking of Native Women in Minnesota. And joining us now is Bruce Fein, who is a constitutional lawyer and he served as Associate Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration, General Counsel of the Federal Communications Commission, and a Research Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Covert Arms Sales to Iran, and a member of the American Bar Association's Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements. He has written several books on the United States Supreme Court, the United States Constitution, and international law, and helped write the articles of impeachment for both President Nixon and President Clinton. He's the author of American Empire Before the Fall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bruce Fein. Again, Bruce Fein is a constitutional lawyer who served as Associate Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration, General Counsel of the Federal Communications Commission, Research Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Covert Arms Sales to Iran, and a member of the American Bar Association's Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements. He has written several books on the United States Supreme Court, the United States Constitution, and international law, and helped write the articles of impeachment for both President Nixon and President Clinton. He is the author of American Empire Before the Fall. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bruce Fein.
Thank you so much, Ian.
So, Bruce, this is a live program, so I don't know what happened, but we're so grateful that you were able to finally join us so I can finally get started here today. Of course, much is made about the drone program, and in many ways, a more accurate way to look at it is an assassination program. And 3,000 people have been killed so far since 9/11 by these means. So the president, in his State of the Union, talked about some more transparency in the program. And also, on Friday, the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is considering John Brennan's nomination, got a letter from him saying, in which he vowed to, if he's confirmed, that he would work closely with the Defense Department to ensure there is no unnecessary redundancy in capability and missions. There you have a possible shift, in as much as the drone program may be shifted away from the CIA into the Defense Department. And then you've got the president in the State of Union Tuesday saying that he wants to be even more transparent about the targeting, detention, and prosecution of terrorists. Does any of that give you any comfort?
No, and let me give a little bit of background for your audience, Ian. The Declaration of Independence, sort of the starting point for thinking about the final end of the state and our rights as citizens of the United States. And it says that we are, because of we're just born as individuals, we're entitled to the protections of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The latter meant virtue and wisdom at that time, not hedonism. But putting that aside, we don't have to justify our right to life and liberty without, you know, with except when due process of law establishes that we've committed some wrong against society. That is inherent in being born. And what we have with the drone program, but it really, drone is just the method at present by which the president extinguishes someone's life. The precedent, the legal theory is that the president in secret can serve as prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner to target anyone, including an American citizen, anywhere on the planet for death based upon his unilateral determination that the target is an imminent threat to the United States. And imminent doesn't mean it will happen very soon. It means that it might happen at any time that the president decides it might be a danger, which could be 5 years or more. For example, when Mr. Alaki was vaporized, destroyed by a predator drone walking in Yemen, he clearly was not someone at that time who was engaged in any active hostilities against the United States, and there was no attempt to capture Mr. Alaki. Now, people say, well, you shouldn't require American soldiers, you know, to endanger their lives when they're trying to kill the enemy. But if the standard is that no one in the armed forces should have to have their lives at risk or limbs at risk in executing their functions, we might as well start dropping nuclear bombs against any country, any people we dislike, and say, hey, we don't want to risk our soldiers, so let's just incinerate everybody who's there. It doesn't really matter whether they're innocent or not, because it's just our say-so that at some future time they could be dangerous to the United States. And if we think throughout the course of history, if we take the history of tyranny, it is impossible to identify any other figure. You could go back to Genghis Khan, you could go back to Ivan the Terrible, you can go back to the Ottoman Sultans, and no one has ever claimed authority to take the life of anyone on the planet based upon a secret determination by one individual that that person is a danger. It's truly an astonishing usurpation and claim of authority. Even God was reluctant to kill everyone before Noah had his ark, that he left Noah alive, I suppose, but our president now claims authority to even exceed that pre-Diluvian days of the Old Testament. And what is equally astounding is that the Congress and the American people seem rather complacent with this authority, in large measure, I believe, because its victims are mostly people whose names sound Arabic or Muslim and not American yet, and therefore there's very little protest. It's not dissimilar to what happened during World War II when President Roosevelt put in concentration camps 120,000 loyal Japanese-American citizens and inhabitants of the United States without a crumb of evidence that any of them had ever committed espionage, sabotage, or were disloyal. And we have that same fact. And at that time, there was virtually no protest either in the United States, even from the American Civil Liberties Union and liberal groups. And at present, even though the danger is far less than World War II, there is a belief, I think, of most Americans, I'm not going to be targeted, therefore, why should I worry? Well, one, just as a matter of dignity, is it really satisfactory for you to wake up and know that your life depends upon the indulgence of the president? You know, you've been reduced to vassalage or serfdom, and you don't have any right to live. It's just an indulgence of your government. And that, to me, is rather terrifying. And the second thing to think about is that even if Obama does not take this terrible authority and use it against Americans in the United States, the legal precedent will lie around like a loaded weapon for any Caligula who happens to enter the Oval Office and decide, well, maybe Obama didn't, but I will, because there isn't anything in theory that prevents the president right now from exterminating you or me or anyone in the audience. And if he says we really were not a danger, well, but in wartime you sometimes make errors. I mean, I hardly have words to describe how someone like me, whose baptism was Washington, was Watergate, and when that president, Richard Nixon, said if the president doesn't, it's legal, that provoked an outcry amongst Americans and a successful effort to drive him from office, first through impeachment articles and before the trial that he knew he would be convicted in the Senate. And now, and what was Nixon's claim was he could burglarize the psychiatrist of Daniel Ellsberg and obstruct justice, not kill people. Now we have a president says he can kill people, and there's no response whatsoever. Truly dismaying. And lastly, if we go back and examine the articles of indictment against King George III that were penned in the Declaration of Independence, we justified a revolution because we were denied rights at jury trial, and we were taxed without representation. There's nothing in our Declaration that at all accuses King George III of extinguishing the lives of all Americans without any process whatsoever. We protested the lack of a jury trial, but our current president doesn't give anyone a trial whatsoever. And so if we use the Declaration of Independence as a benchmark, it shows how tyrannical our own government has become, more so than King George III's.
So, again, I'm speaking with Bruce Fine, who's a constitutional lawyer who served as Associate Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan administration and helped write the articles of impeachment for both President Nixon and President Clinton, and is the author of American Empire Before the Fall. But, of course, Obama is in many ways following his predecessor, George W. Bush. And what's interesting is that the Supreme Court did curtail President Bush's powers under the Hamdi case. The only dissent came from Justice Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court, who supported the Bush administration's theory of executive power, saying that due process requires nothing more than a good faith executive determination. The dissent was written by Sandra Day O'Connor, who remind us of the court's decade-long admonition, a state of war is not a blank check for the president when it comes to the right of the nation's citizens. So, of course, we don't have Sandra Day O'Connor on the court anymore. What is your sense of how long the president can hold off the courts on this issue?
Well, I do not believe that the courts can be trusted to save the republic. It's the American people in Congress who need to react. The courts are too slow. The Hamdi decision that you identified, Hamdi against Rumsfeld, was a decision that simply said you had, with regard to habeas corpus and detainees at Guantanamo Bay who hadn't been killed, that they had a right to at least some kind of hearing. And even there, in the aftermath of Hamdi, the hearing is largely cosmetic because the government relies upon classified secret evidence to say someone's an enemy combatant. And if you don't know what the accusation against you is, it's very hard to respond. That's self-evident. And subsequently, they decided another Hamdan case in Boumediene that provided at least a little bit of greater habeas corpus protection to have your claim that you're not an enemy combatant adjudicated in a federal court. But those have not addressed the issue of killings. And indeed, when there was an effort after Mr. Awlaki was assassinated in Yemen to bring his lawsuit claiming wrongful death, the court threw it out saying it's state secrets privilege in order to question the standards by which President Obama decided to murder Mr. Awlaki. If we would disclose state secrets, therefore the case is thrown out. I mean, it's that kind of, I don't know whether I'd call it Kafkaesque, Orwellian, Alice in Wonderland reasoning. Let's see. If you identify why someone murdered you, disclose a state secret so you lose? Wow. That's something that I used to read about in Alexander Solzhenitsyn's Critique of the Soviet Union. I never expected it to be written by a federal court. And there's an effort even most recently by the ACLU to obtain the written analysis in the Justice Department of the theory behind president's claim that he can kill everyone on the planet in secret, and that failed as well. The courts are inclined, Ian, in times of conflict, to be excessively deferential to the executive branch. They're frightened of national security. I remember in World War II, I spoke about the concentration camps. The two cases went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, well, ordinarily racial distinctions are odious to a free people, but we're fighting, so don't come to the courts for any kind of redress. It's really up to Congress and us to insist that these are impeachable offenses. And I agree with you, Obama's not the first. Bush, Cheney were equally culpable in flouting the Constitution under the banner of national security. And it isn't just Bush, Cheney. It traces back probably 50 or 60 years in terms of a trajectory of ever-increasing executive claims of authority to do whatever they want in the name of national security. Now, we did have a little bit of what you might call a counter-revolution in that trend in the aftermath of the Nixon impeachment, and you may recall the Pike and the Church Committee hearings, where the Americans at that time were appalled that the CIA was attempting to assassinate Castro and Lumumba and Trujillo and others. And that was when President Ford issued an executive order prohibiting assassinations. And now we see it on a grander scale, and people just yawn and say, oh, well, so what? After all, we're empire, we're big, we're the leader of the world, we get to do whatever we want. There's another element that comes into play here, too, Ian, and this is the one that afflicts all empires, and that is failing to recognize, you know, we're not going to have a monopoly on predator drones. There's going to be a time when Russia and China and others get them. And what's going to happen when they decide they'll send predator drones into the United States saying, oh, well, we're trying to kill an enemy combatant, someone who's opposed to our regime, whether it be in Beijing or Moscow or elsewhere, so that we may soon be seeing the double-edged sword that we have set into play with our own use of predator drones, which we argue can be used anywhere in the world that we want on our say-so alone.
Well, Bruce Fine, obviously the executive order against assassinations that was put forth by and signed by President Ford after the Church and Pike committees is absolutely useless now, even though apparently it still binds CIA officers. It doesn't bind the president. And I'm curious to know about the mechanics of this kill list, which is generated, I believe, by the counterterrorism centers and by the military and the CIA. And then eventually it gets up to the National Security Council. And then eventually the president has to sign off on who they decide to zap. And my understanding is that this is not a particularly foolproof procedure. There are a lot of analytics done, with computer analytics where programs sort of, collate all of the activities of somebody and then they gradually move from green to amber to red.
It's lovely. It's like graduation, you know. Yeah. You have to move from one level to another. It'd be humorous, except it's so grisly and ugly. Listen, these are the same experts at intelligence gathering that informed us that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. These are the same experts who predicted Gorbachev would just be like Stalin and Lenin and Khrushchev and others. They did not at all understand perestroika. These are those who couldn't get it right when, India exploded a test a nuclear weapon. So, and we're relying upon these people to hold the authority of life and death over anyone in the world. And now they've moved to what they call signature strikes, whereby they don't even know the identity of the person they've targeted for killing. They just say, well, they assume that any adult male who's in 50 or 100 yards of someone they think is al-Qaeda must be a sympathizer, because al-Qaeda is so paranoid they wouldn't let anyone come within 50 or 100 yards unless they were an associate or colleague. So, and of course there's no post-mortem. Ian, to actually after the fact to say, hey, was this person really a so-called hostile enemy of the United States, or were they like Mr. Alaki's 16-year-old teenage son and U.S. citizen who was vaporized and now disappeared from discourse because president doesn't want to think that he killed somebody who was a child of a father and mother, just like his kid sitting in the White House, and he didn't give him due process, and I can guarantee the 16-year-old was not holding a gun or anything else when he was exterminated. So when we look at the overall effort of the president here to pick and choose, life and death for anybody in the planet, it's a grisly business. And it's going on right in the Oval Office. I mean, going back to Watergate, I remember I was horrified to think, since I've been in the Attorney General's office many times, to think John Mitchell was plotting, with the Gordon Liddy and others, the break-in of the Democratic National Committee in Watergate. He said, "You mean you're plotting crimes in the Attorney General's office?" But I think now we're at the level. It's at the Oval Office. It's the White House. President individually, you know, it's like Henry II and who will rid me of this turbulent priest and Becket gets extinguished. That's what we want our president spending his time doing. And then putting aside even all that that horror, what is the so-called strategy behind it? Where's the success? I mean, how many times have we killed the number two of Al-Qaeda? Like 38, 40 every day? Oh, it's a militant number two. It must be the most dangerous job on the planet. They must have give a lot of life insurance for anyone who's willing to accept a promotion. Well, I don't know whether there actually is promotion like that, other than that in the minds of the CIA. But that's another strike against the whole exercise. Where are the great successes in terms of strategy? Where is it bringing us? You know? And other than risking retaliation and making people hateful towards the United States because we're killing innocent civilians. The president just sort of goes on by its own authority. And now it's become, in some sense, institutionalized with Leon Panetta, the former secretary of, I guess, he's former secretary of defense. Hagel hasn't been voted on yet. Said, now we've had a new medal that we award to those who aren't on the battlefield, don't fly any planes, but they press the buttons in Nevada or Utah to vaporize people with predator drones. You know, that's heroism. Wow. That shows how far we've plunged as a country, Leon.
Well, Bruce Vine, I thank you so much for joining us. And I guess when you say that the American people have to make this change, 80%+ of them are in favor of the drone program. So clearly we've got a long way to go. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Bruce Fine, who's a constitutional lawyer who served as Associate Deputy Attorney General in the Reagan Administration, General Counsel of the Federal Communications Commission, Research Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Covert Arms Sales to Iran, a member of the American Bar Association's Task Force on Presidential Signing Statements. He's written several books on the United States Supreme Court, the United States Constitution, and international law, and helped write the articles of impeachment for both President Nixon and President Clinton. He's the author of American Empire Before the Fall. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the nastiness of the Tea Party bomb thrower from Texas, the junior Senator Ted Cruz.
There's a woman on my block. She just sit there facing the hill. She say, who gonna take away his license to kill? Now he's helping for destruction.